Accession number 14982, Mr. J. Brown, reel 3.
Do you recall the name
right.
of your company commander?
Hmm?
Do you recall the name of your company commander?
Well, we had several company commanders that, when the war started. Oh, my God. Yeah, I should remember.
Do you remember any of the officers when you joined? You know, the
adjutant? I can remember a lot of local blokes. There was, I think he's still alive, some kind of solicitor or whatever. Captain Walton, Johnny Walton. But as far as I know, he's never been interested in reunions or anything. Now, he lived in Durham, but he was when the war started, he was company commander of C Company, which was based on the Stanley area, you know. Well, unfortunately, he was taken prisoner at the beginning of the war. And although I wasn't with C Company, people was in that particular area, we were spotted in there, you know. There was this canal somewhere in the Dunkirk perimeter, and there was a bridge, and Captain Walton at the time, he was taking a patrol over the bridge. He says, don't blow the bridge till they get back. But unfortunately, some bugger blew the bridge. How, I don't know why, but he was finished up as a prisoner of war. Well, he's never forgiven them for that. They're not dead now. But I've never known him to attend any reunion whatsoever. English does mind.
Battalion commander when you joined, who was that?
Leyburn, they called him. Leyburn, he was real old First World War gentleman, you know, nice big busty bloke like, but obviously too old for the Second World War. So we had our local, he's dead now, we had McLaren. He was something high up on the coal board, like after the war, but he was major mind. He came as mustard, a big Stratton bloke, and he got the DSO coming back to Dunkirk. Now, as the war started, is this too far ahead?
If we can keep on with the training element at the moment.
The training, these fellas were with the 8th Battalion down. There was Johnny Walton, who was good enough. I think he was a company commander. I think he was some relation of the colliery manager at Langley Park at the time. That's unusual there. I'm just a guess. And we got an influx of senior NCOs and warrant officers from the regular army, you know. Great blokes, you know, but they were just to give that extra boost, you know. There was not much, I mean, I say we knew nothing about blitzkrieg warfare, but they were giving you the dynamite. We've got Junty Curry, he'd come from the 1st Battalion. We used to call him the Bull, a great bloke, you know. No higher than me, but a pair of shoulders on, a bull neck, you know. He looked something like Tyson, only with a white face, you know. Well, his face wasn't white, it was ruddy. Jet black hair, strip back, flashing, you know. Up at 5 o'clock in the morning, run round the village, getting everybody out of a couple of mile run, you know, before breakfast and all that. Great fella. And we've got a one from from the Coldstream Guards, Tellus, giant of a man, you know. Well, he got took prisoner at the beginning of the war. Johnty Curry got took prisoner at the war. They shouldn't have got took prisoner, these fellas. And it went on and on, you know. Well, his memory comes back. Sometimes it plays you tricks, but...
Were they good officers? Did you get on well with your officers when you first joined?
Oh, they were quite all right. We'd got a chap from the King's Own Scottish Borders. The adjutant was always a regular soldier, mind.
Who was that?
You got an adjutant, you might have him 4 years, and then I retired, you know, or he went back to his unit, and this, that, and the other.
Do you recall the name of your adjutant when you joined, the man that spoke
yes,
to you?
Yes, Clark, they called him. We called him Nobby Clark. But he was English, but he come from the King's Own Scottish Borders, and for a long time he still wore the Glengarry, you know. He had a tash down here, and he talked, I don't know, is it Oxford English? It says to me, what? You know, and all that, but he's a great bloke and a great shoulders, you know, a gentleman. And he survived up to Sicily, and he got killed at the Primosoli Bridge, and by that time, he was commander of the 9th Battalion. He'd been promoted when he got killed at the Fremantle Bridge. But a nice fellow. He was an adjutant.
Were there
and
any
just before him, we had a bloke. But he must have went into retirement because he was getting on. And the hell did they call him? Eric Dryden. Tall, thin, maybe 6'3". Never been married, never this, that, and the other. A whiskey nose on and all this. And a villain. Language, oh, dear me, how great. I could support some things, but I wouldn't go on a tape, I don't think. Hey.
Were there any officers that you didn't get on well or didn't come up to scratch in these early days again?
Not in the early days. No, not in the early days. I think most of them had served with the battalion so long, and they weren't all old men, like, and they knew most of the blokes that were around about, you know, realised the background and knew you were together. And discipline was our mind, but, I mean, English, he's a great bloke, English. He's my company commander twice. Well, he was a second lieutenant, and he's in charge of the carrier platoon in France. They were lent out to the French once over, and he did a hell of a job of work, not being with them then, of course. He got mentioned in dispatches. Then later on in the desert, he went up to... He was captain when I knew him, of course. He got the military cross 3 times. Totally fearless bloke. Aye.
What are your memories of your very first NCOs?
Well, the first NCOs was obviously in the Bugle Band. The local blokes. What we called old Tommy Carr lived in Allington Place, you know. Another First World War bloke. Although he was only about... He was only 42 when the war started. And he went to France with us to begin the war. But when he come back, there was a lot like him. They put him on home detail and then probably finished him, you know. Because there was a few, like... Where he'd, in the First World War, he'd been... There's a cross in Durham Cathedral, isn't there? From Wallencourt, 1917 or something. He got wounded there. He had a hole right through his arm here. And, well, he was a good bugler. So as time had went on, he'd rejoined the battalion, like, sometime in the 20s, you know. And he went on, and Billy Wright was bugle major, and he packed it in, and Tommy Carr took the job. He's a good bugle major. But the NCOs, you're on first name terms with him, you know. By actually being a good bugler in one thing or another, and he had there was a competition at the annual camp every year. We could only hold it once, mind. You got CO's bugle, you know. And there was one silver bugle then, you got that like it. There was no inscription and out on it. What was an honour to get it? Well, I won it in 1935, see? So I had to give it 1936, somebody else got it like. And then by the war started, I was a full corporal then. You couldn't be a lance corporal in the bugle band. Don't ask me why, but if you got promotion, so Tommy Carr said, I put you in for promotion. I says, I go on. And I was full corporal when the war started, see? But as I say, the training had stepped up, you know. And in the initial days, you just did your bugle and one thing or another. But by the time the war kicked off, you had a good idea what it was about, the hole in the ground. You're trying to kill somebody, was trying to kill you and all that. And then we started to train as a motorised division, you know. And we were...
Before we come to that, what was the attitude of, you know, the civilian population towards territorials pre-war? Did they respect you?
There was no adverse... there was that many joined, you know. No, they used to... A bit kids, Saturday night soldiers, you know. You know, all this, like, you know. And you just took it in your stride, like... And, when you went on your annual camp, wherever you was, you found a village or there was always a town within striking distance. The people were quite nice to you, you know, and you had your few little bits of coppers to spend and all that. There was no problems, like, it was, you know.
So, before the war started, and obviously from the time that you joined, you were basically bugling, and did you have to put in certain number of drills with your rifle? With your rifle, you know, drilling.
No, you had to put a certain number of drills in. It was 2 nights a week, you know. And not all year round, of course. The winter didn't happen, but during the summer leading up to your camp. And then it's finished again till the next year. But those 2 nights were checked in. And if you had a good excuse, odd nights, you know, that was okay. But if you kept missing drills for no purpose, you got less bounty. instead of getting the £31.50, you got a bit less money, you say, and such as that. But as regards arms drill and learning your weaponry, right up till about the beginning of 38, there's nobody pushed it like. As long as you're a good bugle band, you're a bugle. And I suppose in the rifle company, as long as you're a good rifleman, that was, you didn't have to be a bugle. You know what I mean? Like,
were you given any training for gas precautions?
Just when the war started. You wait till the war started, and then they really overdid that, you know. You got it and got it and got it, and you hooked these gas masks all over the road. And when you got to the Western Desert, you buried them. And the Germans did the same.
Where were you on that moment when war was declared? Do you remember that Sunday morning?
Yes, well, I'd had a... Oh, it's easy to remember. I'd had quite a lot of jobs, you know. I left Blakey the Slater, and I went on a navvy. I went to Pitts first, that's right. That closed down. I left the Pitts, and I went to Blakey the Slater. I jacked that in. I went to a Darlington firm, public works contractors, Freeman and Freeman. And Lane Sue was here and there. It was long hours, good money though, you know. And it was a right old mixture. The fist fights every dinner time. There was a lot of mix on the job, you know, travelling Irishmen. Like, never all bad blokes, but drunkards and living in a local kip and all that, you know. And that run us, what, maybe a couple of years, something like that. And he run out of work. So a mate of mine, he was in the bugle band, same name, no relation, Tommy Brown. He wasn't a very good bugler, but he was in the bugle band. And we got on well together. And he said, hey, do you want a job? I said, oh, that. He was window cleaning for Stones in Durham, Walter Stones. Now, Walter had all the contracts for schools, colleges, most of the shops in Durham. Well, you lost no time, you know. See, you could only do schools and colleges to end a term, mind. We had Sherman House Hospital, Earls House Hospital. The work was there, so he lost no time. He's a good bloke to work for. The money was good now. So he says, somebody left. He says, you know, I was young and fit, you know, one thing or another. So he spoke for him and went, now, Walter says, yes, you can start. He says, hope you stick in, make a good job. And I said, we did, like. And I was actually there till the war started. But Walter, he was a good bloke to work for. Schools and Holland and all that, you know, if you don't have, you'd work a weekend. And no double time, I know, but it was, the job was good, you know what I mean, like. And but normally, you finished on a Friday night, you went in on a Saturday morning, you knocked about the banks in the marketplace. It was just, it's a doddle, you know. A couple hours, you went into the little pie shop and had a pie, then he went down, his place was down Watergate. And he had a little sitting room at the back, he used to sit in there. And his wife, Margaret, she used to have the ginger woman, she used to have the kettle on, a cup of tea and a scone piece and all that, and you're crapping about. And he used to shout you in one at a time. Jackson, Jackson's my first name, by the way, Jackson Brown. Jackson, right-o, Walt, went in. Them was the hours you had in this, that, and you're tapping in. He said, right-o, is that right? Yes, that's right. Well, I give you wages, you know. Well, the average miner was working for about 38, £2 a week, you know, them days. He'd maybe 50 bob, you know. And most of the weeks, if you had a good week, you know, he had another 10 bob note on the top. So it was good. If you got a new customer, he'd let you keep it the first twice. We used to keep it about the first 4 times. You know, that was okay, like, it was that was diplomacy, you know. And there's always somebody, hey, can you get the ball out the spout, you know, or do you think you'd clean my spouts out? Why? Have you got a towel? Have you got an old bucket? Eye? 5 minutes flat, you know. And I said, no, it doesn't matter, it's all right, make a couple of bob, you know, £4. Laugh. But that was a good job. It was outdoors, my God. Outdoors most of the time, anyway. But, where was I going to go from there?
The war started.
A Friday, 1st of November. We knew it was coming.
September.
Right? Sorry, 1st of September. And, most of the time you work two together doing this, that, and it was odd times. And I used to have a one on a Friday. I used to, about once a fortnight, I came up from Giles, it way, the way around the drill hall, and I went round behind the drill hall, around the fair, what we call the fails, this, that, and the other. And I went away down the sands, and I did all them little cottages along there. And the last one was, is there still a girls' school down there now? The provincial laundry was underfoot. I don't worry, but behind that there's a big building, and I think it is it's some kind of school. It was what they called a brownie school. The girls all wore brownie uniforms and all that. Right round that side, we used to do that school at the end of the term. But on this particular Friday, I was there, the caretaker's house, or Janet, whatever he was, the house is still there. It's on the riverside there. And I went to do that house, and I was just finishing. The woman come out, she says, she knows in the Terriers. She says, they're calling the Terriers up mind, and she had a wireless, wasn't everybody had a radio. Sure enough, report your local drill out. So it was only long water side into Watergate, and put the ladders in, and A. Walter wasn't in. She was in. I said, I've been called up. I said, she says, yeah, I know, I've heard the way. And Tommy Brown had to go. He was already in. So I was standing here. I was standing in the marketplace where the horses, you know. There was a bus stop there then. I went up to Giles, get up the road ends. 1,500 weights running around all the world with sergeants in and shouting and bawling, you know, and other. I was standing there, wham, there was one come up from over, he had about three blocks of blocking about. Jump on, he says. Where are we going? If we're going to drill, I'll be called up. Well, I thought, this is ridiculous, you know what I mean? Like, so straight into drill, all milling around, day and out. So I just walked out, went up home, got myself squared up, had a bite to eat, went up and saw my future wife, told her, got all my gear, and then ambled down to drill hall. I didn't have been out, like, I mean, it was just chaos where I left. So you got, they didn't know what to give you, inoculations first, or give you a feed first, foot around. And most of the lads seemed quite cold, calm, a collection. I wish they'd get organised. And then the next morning, you had to sleep there, you know. Next morning, I slept up a dorm, like. I knew there wasn't any panic, like. But
what was your initial reaction yourself personally to knowing that war was as close as that? And you may be shot at.
It wasn't a say brave, let's get at them sort of style. You didn't worry about it, like. We knew, like, I suppose without being brainwashed about it, it went on all along, the Germans' invasion of Poland and this and that and the other, and Czechoslovakia, and the monkey he made out of the British Prime Minister, and all this sort of thing. It was obvious, everybody knew war was going to come, like. So you just meant what day are you going, like. And you're young and you were strong, you know. And what the future held, you didn't know. You sort of left it them above you to say, well, we'll go there and this is what we'll do. That, I never heard anybody say, hey, why, I wonder on this, that and the other. So, in fact, they wanted to get to France, a lot of them. I think they wanted to look around these Brussels and one thing. And, well, you know, being young fellas and all that, like. But anyway, the weekend at the drill off, Sunday morning, the whole company had to assemble. There's double strength, like, they had to split them up then. Oh, stand the drill off. Pretty big wireless set, you know. There's the current Prime Minister?
Chamberlain,
aye. Prime Minister, Mr. Chamberlain's going to speak to the nation. Then he give it off about, you know, those words. I didn't know whether he was crying or what, but his voice was so, you know. And so what he says, rather that, let's get at them and all this bullshit, you know. They think they're all sort of getting the Jaramox next door. And pretty quiet run over there, his sinus went, but you'll never say no like it. Didn't took them long to get here, you know. Jerem of Austria, round the back of the drill hall, ships has failed. In 20 minutes, the duck trench is about 8 foot deep, you know. We all knew it was, you know, it was just a game, man. So we left. And then they seemed to settle down then. And we spent a week or two. The other companies round the various villages would be doing the same. We used to march out to Castleway and all that, spend few hours, half a shift out there, and then come back, and with the various duties, guard duties and all this, and, you know, nobody's allowed out, you've got to stop in the drill hall and all that. Well, it was overcrowded, so they sent our platoon, we had to march over to St. Oswald's Church Hall, still there, opposite St. Oswald's Churchyard. Well, Kipman in there.
Were you sleeping on the floor? Or
just sleeping on the floor. They didn't even give you palliasses then. You were just sleeping on the deck.
How were they feeding you?
Well, the usual, like, the army never overfed your mind, like, not in service, like. Sometimes it was terrible. At that particular time, oh, you got, what they call it, a rissole, maybe for breakfast, something like that. Odd mornings, you get a drop of porridge, but there was no sugar and all of that, like, you know, and such as like that. And a pot of tea. And there seemed to be plenty of bread, like, and all that, you know. And at that time, you got one dinner a day. It was usually what we call a sea pie. Why a sea pie dinner? It was like that between eight men, big pie crust on. It was like meat pie, you know. It would have been plenty of gravy, and it was quite filling. And the potatoes, a couple of grains, and all that, like, you know. But tea time was hit or miss. There might be a bit of cheese and any bread that'd be left would be on the in the dining room tables, and you help yourself, you know. But,
But was this cooked by the your own cooks? Was it your own cooks that cooked this?
Oh, yes. Your own cooks cooked it. There's no sliced bread them days, mind. You had to have a sharp knife or tear a bit off, like.
Were you digging lots of trenches? Was there still the attitude that you're going to be into a trench warfare situation?
The attitude was there for the trench warfare, but we didn't dig trenches. So, I mean, I was still dealing with when we were still at Durham at the drill hall. We're down these, we're getting out the local Cassop Moor and down manoeuvring, but there's no digging it out like that. You know, you're down section stalks and such as that. And
what's a section stalk?
Sections to section goes out, stalking maybe an enemy machine gun position or any kind of position, you know. You've got to, they'll tell you why over there is a German section or a machine gun or a mortar team. See if you can get to it without being, you know, which is difficult. Like, you might have forgotten on top of my lap, you know. And somebody would get the job of being out there as the enemy, you see. And art of camouflage and all that, you say, and how to conceal yourself in a sniping position or something like that, you know, and over open, you're marching over open ground and you come under fire and you've got to do the battle drill, you know, down, crawl, observe, sights, fire. I mean, as soon as you come under fire, go down, crawl into any available cover, if there is any, and then he observes, see where you think he's at, and then set your sights to that, and then fire when you can. That's it, like. But they give you that and that, it'll come second here. You still haven't forgot it, you see. And just it went on from there. And then
were you, as a bugler section, were you just training on this Bren gun all the time, or were you involved in these sections and
Well, you had to go out when there was a scheme on, like, say, company or battalion scheme. You were with battalion headquarters, you know. Now, well, I mean, obviously, late in the war, battalion headquarters was just a name, like, you'd see, oh, might be all the bloody signals, anyway, the mortars was there, you know, but at that time, they seemed to think we were going to be together all the time. I don't know why. So what you did, you had four Bren guns. It was your job as an NCO to pick out suitable spots, put a Bren gun over there with the likeliest area where an aircraft would come in, same with them, and so, you know, and then in the event of a ground attack, you could take them off the tripods, off the Motley Mountains, and you had to have some kind of cover for a field of, have a field of fire that way for enemy infantry attacking, you know. Went through that and that and that, but it never really come to that, like. I mean, as I say, they found out you were extra firepower and they lent you out the rifle companies, so you were always with the rifle companies in trouble, so it was better being with one rifle company that wasn't always in trouble. That's what happened with Ruthman.
You became a motorised.
We were a motorised division, aye.
What training were you getting for that?
Oh, you're offloading. Of course, you've got to get on, usually, if you're travelling into an area where you're liable to be immediately into action, you're in battle order, like, you had to get your on. But if you're down to travel maybe hundreds of miles and such as that, like, you didn't have to be such alert of that. Your gear could be lying on the floor anywhere. But you had, usually when it was coming, you had three seats, three planks down the centre of the wagon. You had three sections, you see, in a platoon. And a section on each, sat on each one, you know. Right? In the event of air attack, out the blue, like, the wagon stopped, like, the wagon driver stopped. The two outside sections jumped straight out and went out about 25 or 30, 40 yards, dropped onto the box and looked for the aircraft, whatever weapon they had. And the rear section, the centre section, he jumped off the back and they went out that way. You know what I mean? Like, and so you're away from the wagon if it got hit. You spread out for less casualties and you engaged, you know what I mean? You get about 30 blokes, some firing brands and some firing rifles, you know. The bloke in the aircraft is going to be a bit wary, you see. So,
Were you requisitioning vehicles at this stage?
Hmm?
Were you requisitioning vehicles or were you issued with all army vehicles?
Oh, that when we, in the early part of the war, after we'd left Durham, like we did, we had to go down to Whitburn, do our firing and one thing and another. We marched back from Whitburn and we did a fortnight down there. We marched back. And that was part of the training. I sharpened them off, which is all right. And another two or three days, they had a concert party in the drill hall. That was a farewell party. And at the dead of night, we got the train. We didn't know how we were going. We went down to the Cotswolds, the village called Charlbury.
Do you remember the date that you left Durham?
Oh, I've it near enough written down somewhere. Can that hang on very long? Late October. That's when we moved down to Charlbury, like.
Did you go by train?
Yes, we went by train, and it's a pretty little village, Charlbury. It's got its own station. There's five pubs. You always count the pubs first, like. There's always one church and count the pubs. And anyway, there'd been an advance party down there, obviously. It's got to be an advance party. A colour sergeant and a few odds and sods and that, and getting the village ready. And there were stables and all that, you know. But quite surprised how comfortable we were. Palliasses, there was plenty of straw in the village. Everybody did the garden. All the fruit trees were, you know, and all. Lovely little village and very friendly people. Oh, they were really friendly people. Never been back, but I'd like to go back there.
You were sleeping on palliasses. Where did you keep your personal equipment? You wouldn't have lockers for them.
Oh, no, not an active service, no. You had your pack, you had your big pack, you had your kit bag, you know. Anything you weren't using in your immediate future would be in your kit bag, you see. Well, it issued with a couple of blankets, and you had your palliass. You were young and strong, and that was no problem. And in Charlbury, the food wasn't exceptional, but wasn't too bad. You got enough to get through, you know.
Latrines and washing, how did you cope with that?
Well, you had to do your own the best you could, like. You know, there was no laundry, you know, to that line.
Personal washing and latrines.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, we were billeted in what they call the Vic Cinema. That's a high fine note there. It wasn't a cinema that we know, you know. It was a barn, no more than a barn, at a few steps leading to the little attic, so they could project the film onto a screen down there somewhere. And there was our platoon. We weren't the Bugle Band down, we were the light machine gun platoon. There's us and the mortar platoon in there. And they put a boxing ring in there now, by the way. They used to get half killed in there. So, and you used to slip round on the floor, like, but you had your palliass, you know. I'd have slept in any with direction. And there was a little passage out there with one tap in, cold water, but that was it, hand you off. You got to wash and shave on them all, and some got up earlier than others, you know, one thing or another.
Toilets? How did you manage for toilets?
There was a toilet. There wasn't any communal toilets, like, you know. We had a one at the back, like, where you make your own. If there wasn't a one it wasn't pulling a chain or nothing like that. The pioneers usually, what we call shit wallers, they dug a trench, you know, or ashen round it and such as that, you know, and this, that and the other.
Were you able to keep pretty clean?
Oh, yes, right. Oh, well, yeah, you kept clean, you know. And, in fact, not all of them. Like, but a lot of the villagers were very, very friendly people, you know. And quite a lot of blokes were invited for a Sunday afternoon tea and such as that, you know. And you had a bath there. I didn't find anybody with a bath, but they could make down men, you know, like, you had a makeshift bath and all that, like. Of course, you didn't register these things at the time for some of them, didn't know, you know. we were always claimer. You had to be claim like, you know. And
what were you doing down there?
Training. Oh, really? We started to get our vehicles, you know. We'd been training just as infantry, ground infantry, you know. But we knew we were going to be motorised, but the vehicles were coming in as fast as we could produce them. Brand new, you know. And we were training on them, especially the rifle companies to start with day in, day out. You know, taking them out in the area and offloading, getting on, get off. The wagon drivers would pull the wagons back out, and the infantry would attack a position over there, you know. And then this, that, and the other. The wagon would come back and have to pick them up in a hurry if they'd got a bloody nose or something like that.